when the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara had this profound great wisdom go beyond his Paramita, he clearly saw that the five aggregates, the skandhas, are all empty and just pass beyond suffering. O Sariputta, form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. The same applies also to feeling, sensation, perception, mental configurations, and consciousness. O Sariputra, all things, dharmas, are in themselves empty, neither coming to be nor ceases to be, neither pure nor impure, neither increasing nor decreasing. Thus, within emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, sensation, no perceptions, no mental configurations, no consciousness. Within emptiness, there is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no thought. There is no fear of seeing, of hearing, of smelling, of tasting, of touching. No fear of consciousness. Within emptiness, there is no delusion, nor extinctions of delusions, and so on. It's through the 12 links of arising due to the conditions, or there is a chain of dependent origination, to old age and death, nor extinctions of old age and death. Within emptiness, there is no suffering, no cause of suffering, no end of suffering, and no way to the end of suffering. Within emptiness, there is no knowledge, no attainment, and nothing that can be attained. The Bodhisattva realized all the great wisdom gone beyond, and so his heart is free of hindrances. Because his heart is free of hindrances, he is free of fear. Going beyond all error and delusion, he enters final nirvana. All past, present, and future Buddhas rely on the great wisdom. The great wisdom go beyond and so attain to perfect and complete awakening. Now, know therefore that the great wisdom gone beyond is the great mantra. The wisdom mantra which is supreme and fearless and delivers from all suffering. It is true, not then, therefore it is proclaimed, the mantra of the great wisdom goes beyond and is proclaimed thus, Gatigate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhiswaha. Gone beyond, gone altogether beyond, enlightenment fulfilled.
Thank you.
So I would like to invite my respect to Archbishop to this meeting.
Probably for a lot of Christians, the language of emptiness is one of the things they find hardest in coming to terms with Buddhist teaching. We have got used to hearing this in a negative way. And the notion that what we encounter is the inseparability of form and emptiness is, I think, quite hard for Western minds and especially Christian minds. Surely, Christians say, God made the world and saw that it was good. But there is equally within the Christian tradition the strand which says, to believe that God made the world is to believe that everything that is in and only in the eternal. It is the expression of the divine utterance. Separate it from that divine utterance, and there is nothing. So, there is not, I think, such an absolute gulf fixed between two traditions of understanding as some might imagine. We have different metaphysics, to put it mildly, Buddhists and Christians.
Wonderful understatement.
Yet, when I read, let's say, St. Augustine writing about the mind and its working, what I read him as saying is that as we turn inwards to understand ourselves and to understand what we understand as we understand the world, we are not turning towards something which is solid and fixed. We are turning always towards the communication that is coming from the divine. There is no thing there that we can lay hold on. There is an act of the eternal coming to us. And so, in reading and reflecting on the Heart Sutra, I am reminded here, if I may again speak of resonances and echoes, of the language that many Christians have used to say that when we open ourselves to God, we do not open ourselves to some thing, some item in the universe, some essence that we can lay hold of. In the 6th century, we have the so-called Dionysius writing about the final stages of receiving the divine, where he says, "We take away all names. This is what is neither here nor there, neither one nor three." He even goes so far as to say that. "This is what is. This is being, which is not a being or a set of beings or a supreme individual. This is." For Christians, as we try to speak of this in the light of our history, we speak in terms of the Trinity. We speak in terms of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Not three individuals who live in heaven, which is a place some distance from earth, but that eternal action, which we can only apprehend or speak of in these three interlocking, interdependent ways, ways in which we seek to make sense of entering the mystery, the unutterable, indefinable mystery, which is the source. But emptiness is a word used frequently in the Christian writing of the Middle Ages, especially what comes from Germany and the Low Countries in the late Middle Ages. What we embark on, say writers of this period, is a path that has no way to it. What we undertake is a question in German, ohne warum. There is no why about it. And that ohne warum, without a why, that expresses something of the tracklessness of what we embark on as we contemplate. No form, no feeling, no perception, no mental configurations, no consciousness. And for the Christian in this tradition, and again I look for instruction here from yourselves, for the Christian in this tradition, that does not mean that consciousness, form, and sensation are unreal in the sense that I'm mistaken in an ordinary sense about them. It means that if I seek to freeze and solidify these things and treat them in abstraction from the act of God, I misunderstand them. I'm always engaged in responding to that eternal, limitless action which cannot be solidified, cannot be held down. And so when in contemplation we seek to remove particular images and perceptions from our minds, it is not because we've changed our minds about creation being good. It is to say that our minds must be liberated from narrow, limiting perception in order to make contact or be in contact with that eternal, limitless act. St. Augustine once again speaks, and many others speak, not of knowing but of touching. Touching. Just for a moment, the mind touches, as if, as someone said, as if the box closes. You touch for a moment that which is. And Augustine famously describes in his Confessions his experience of a conversation with his mother shortly before she died, as they spoke together, not even in silence, but as they spoke together, they shared the sense that they touched what was, what is beyond speech. So the echoes of this language of emptiness are there. This is an area where, because of the minor metaphysical difficulties we have, it's harder, perhaps, to find common ground and to know how to approach it. And yet, the practice of, again, being watchful towards one's own attachment to image, to word, to place, or whatever, the practice, I think, has a great deal in common. And for the Christian, behind it is what might be called the fundamental shape of our story, which is of the God who, in coming among us in the life of Jesus, lets go, abandons the distance of Godhead, as if Godhead is something over there, over against us, speaks in our midst and empties out his own human life in accepting suffering and death, and is resurrected not as another item in the world, but as absorbed into, absorbed is the wrong word, restored into, welcomed into that which is. So when the divine comes among us, the word of God becoming flesh in Jesus Christ, we don't say, simply as an ancient Greek might have said, here is a God who has walked down to earth and now walks among us. We say, here is the truth in our midst, not far away. Both in Hebrew and Christian scripture, we have formulae about this. Do not say the word is far from us. How shall we climb up to heaven to find the word? No, the word is with you and in you. So that the incarnation is not the stepping down of God from heaven into earth like a change of place. It is the flowering from the depths of reality of that creative power which sustains everything in this life and in this death, which is Jesus. I could say more, but we might be here for a very long time. I simply want to make the point that the shape of the Christian story, in underlining again and again the importance of self-emptying, the fundamental word kenosis in Greek, emptying, makes something of a bridge to speak here. We believe in a God who empties divinity, so that we cannot be under the illusion that God is a being far away. We encounter a God who, in the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, in emptying out the distance, the difference, is alive in our midst and through the Spirit lives in us and transforms us. So, finally, just returning to the Heart Sutra here. Within emptiness, there is no knowledge, no attainment, and nothing that can be attained. most of our teachers, I think, would say, and I think here of teachers like Eckhart, Zuzo, John of the Cross, would say that the greatest mistake we can make in the practice of contemplation is to imagine that somehow we are on a journey from here to there, at the end of which we have more than we have when we started. And that is why St. John of the Cross says we go by a way in which there is no path, and at the end of which we have, as you might say, less than we started. We do not achieve God. And the task of contemplation is not to store up a great wealth of spiritual capital, which we can then exchange for spiritual goods. It is to be attuned to the truth of God, to live in the mysterious encounter that we call the life of the Trinity, and to do so by sensing and experiencing in ourselves the self-emptying which has made possible our entire invitation into life.
Thank you very much. Now, Professor Sato.
Yes,
okay, sorry.
It's a great honor to be here with the great distinguished speakers and also the guests on this very, I would say, historical moment. I think about 16 or 17 years ago, His Holiness the Dalai Lama gave a seminar called John Main Seminar in Middlesex University. And about, I think, 6 or 7 days, commenting on the gospel, and that was very, very moving. Moving occasion. I had the opportunity to join that, and also today, you know, here with the Dr. Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. William, be here and to join this dialogue. The Heart Sutra belongs to a group of sutra which is called Panchaparamita Sutra, and that group of sutra, Panchaparamita Sutra, if we read, the most of the terms are there's no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no consciousness, and no. Carries on. And as Dr. Wellman explained, saying that the term the emptiness in English is not that easy term. And different scholars trying to use different terms in English, such as saying the voidness. And there are different terms try to use because the emptiness has some kind of negative connotation, as it said. But here the Sanskrit term, shunyata, and in Tibetan, tongwanyin, the meaning, or the term itself may carry some negative connotation, the main meaning is not nothingness. Actually, it is everything. When he says emptiness, it is talking about everything. Another different term is used, like it's almost equivalent of emptiness, in Buddhism is dependent arising, paditta samuppada. And dependent arising and emptiness, these two views are, you know, that if we try to understand, they will arrive. It will arrive in the same understanding: dependent arising and emptiness. And that is very often explained. Some of the great Indian masters, like second century BC, great Indian master called Nagarjuna, and some of his readings, some of his writings are mainly focused on this subject, on emptiness. And very often when he started to explain the emptiness, he explained from the understanding of dependent arising. So when we read the sutra, saying from the form that we have, the body, to all the way for the Buddhist to experiencing enlightenment, they all are empty. The meaning is they all come into being through dependent arising. As Dr. William used the term saying, no fixing, no fixation. That is the exact term we can use. The form, that body that I have, is not some kind of fixed entity. It is in a flux of moving, momentariness. But what we have the notion of some kind of fixed, concrete, solidified. And that notion quite often make us to feel, you know, a sense of greed, sense of anger, sense of jealousy, sense of envy. All those, you know, the unhealthy mental states as well as behavior. So the teaching of emptiness is given, given to tackle or to deal with those greedy mind, those mistaken mind, those those unhealthy mental states, really very much to explain how the things and events are. As Dr. William used that statement saying, this is what it is. And that is the meaning of emptiness. Emptiness means, you know, what the things and events are. And the things and events are, you know, in the nature of dependent arising, not in a fixed, concrete, solid entity. And this is, again, not that easy subject, not that easy subject at all, but Buddha himself, like the southern Buddhist tradition, Theravadan Buddhist tradition, and also northern Buddhist tradition, Mahayana Buddhist tradition, we talk about selflessness, anatma. And the theory of emptiness is, you know, the extension or expansion of that view, the view of selflessness or anatma. Again, here, selflessness doesn't mean self, I, or the sense of identity is not there. The meaning of selflessness is very much that our notion of self, our notion of I, or the sense of identity, which we have is some kind of very solid, fixed, you know, the concrete, unchanging. But the nature of the I or the self, actually, it is, you know, the not solid, not fixed, not, you know, the concrete. It is in a process of changing, momentariness. And again, the teaching is given in order to reduce or in order to tackle the grasping or attachment to the self or the I or the sense of identity. So here, the, you know, the again, Dr. William used this pre-Trinity. And in the Mahayana Buddhism, there are three, what we call the three kayas, or three bodies. And at the John Mann seminar, Dalai Lama and Father Lawrence, they share on this subject, the Christian, you know, the belief in Trinity, and the Mahayana Buddhists believe in three kayas, three bodies. And there are many similarities, you know, the, how, you know, three trinities are explained. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So anyway, I will conclude to say it is really, really great honor, and it is amazing to have this kind of dialogue, you know, and to share the, you know, the readings and understandings to benefit to the humanity, you know, to have some kind of common goal and to work common is something very amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I would like to invite Professor Sato.
Yes.
For this point.
Yes.